Sure. My name is Steve Haig. Beth and I worked on this project together. We got our wires crossed. I think the original plan was for me to do a poster and her to do the oral presentation, and I contacted her a couple weeks ago and she said, "Hey, I've got my poster done." That's cool, Beth. But what I do want to talk about is this idea about training agronomy undergraduates for, and we're not totally comfortable with the title, but we couldn't come up with a better one, for mission-based service as being part of the curriculum design. What we're experiencing at Texas A&M and Auburn University is seeing a similar trend there as well, is we are getting a lot of students who aren't necessarily from a production agriculture background. We get a lot of students at A&M from Dallas and from Houston that they don't know what a corn plant looks like. They don't know what a wheat plant looks like. They've never driven a tractor. So they're just not coming from that background. But we also see a lot of students that are interested in careers or activities after they graduate, going into the Peace Corps, involving themselves in these NGOs, these international agriculture charity organizations. We're seeing more students that are interested in doing church missions. We see a lot of students that want to be a part of the FAO or the federal government or even state government in agriculture policy that may not necessarily have a strong agriculture production background. And we're also seeing a lot of veterans come back from service overseas that they've seen a lot of bad things over there, and they may want to go a different direction in their lives than what they've seen before, or that they saw what the production agriculture systems were in some of these countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, and they want to go back and they want to make a difference. But so they don't necessarily have the background or the experience, and that's what they're seeking. And we focus a lot on trying to attract students, you know, K through 12, bring them in, get them involved in agronomy, turn them into PhD students, and that's great and wonderful, and we should be doing that, and we need to be doing that. But I also think there's an untapped resource there of students that may not necessarily want that kind of depth, and that we still we've got an opportunity here to create these minors that can broaden the appeal of our departments. And there's several benefits for the students. I love it when I have a student that's not from my from our department that comes in and into my class and engage them in conversations, and it expands the perspective that our students have in that classroom, because they, you know, you start developing the same cohorts in your classroom, and your ideology and the way you think, it just becomes very narrow there. So I think there's a lot of benefits into bringing in students from a diverse background into your classroom. I think for these students, if they could engage in a high-quality minor, they're trained better, but it also offers them an opportunity to broaden their network of people. So they get to know people in a lot of different fields that they wouldn't necessarily have contact with in their major. From a departmental standpoint, I mean, at the end of the day, we need butts in the seat. So it's always nice to have those course hours. But more importantly, I think that it's important that we get our message out, that we broaden the appeal of our department, that other people on campus know what we're about, and increase their visibility. One of the things that I often tell our students is that, you know, whether you become a PhD or a really high impactful scientist or not, when you go back to your church or to your Lions Club or to the Kiwanis Club or any type of organization, community organization, because you have a degree from Texas A&M or if you were a major in agriculture or a minor in agriculture, you're going to be expected to be some sort of, you know, quasi-expert on this material. So it's important that they understand what's going on there. And from a societal standpoint, I see a lot of these NGOs that aren't necessarily truth-based or science-based. When they're going into these countries and they're promoting organic agriculture, not that organic agriculture in and by itself is necessarily bad, but they're saying that's the only way to produce food, that it's the only sustainable method. That's kind of scary and dangerous, in my opinion. And so I think that we need to get some of these students that are interested in pursuing these pathways, to get them a little bit better trained in science-based and truth-based training. I think, in turn, it makes better use of aid money if you have a person that's actually engaging there, that they know what they're doing. And then I think overall it makes for just better sound public policy that we have effective, competent people that are going out and doing these types of activities. This was I saw this come across my Twitter a few months ago. The Peace Corps in 2014, last year, they had over 17,000 Americans apply for two-year programs. And this was a 22-year high. And it represented a 70% increase of what they saw the year before. And what happened between 2013 and 2014? Well, they credit it to where the application process was much easier and simpler, and people weren't getting discouraged there. But they also credited revitalization of recruitment. So I think if this trend continues, there's going to be more need for people to be better prepared to go into Peace Corps. And we're seeing this with a lot of NGOs and a lot of church mission-based programs as well. So before we send these students out into the wilderness, they had better have a plan and they had better be prepared. And so I think if we start designing these training programs, these minors, obviously they need a strong core. They need formal training in our introductory soil and crop science classes. I think there's opportunities to develop distance learning modules and courses there. But I also think, and what I'm proposing here and what we're trying to develop with Auburn, are international laboratories where we send the students into systems and into places that they're not necessarily totally comfortable with or have a lot of experience with. So if they gain some rudimentary knowledge in terms of small-scale equipment, you know, how to plow a field with a horse or a mule, food processing, how, you know, we're not going to have all the safety standards that we see in the U.S., so you're going to have to process some of your own food, you know, how to dress a chicken out, some items like that. Principles of conservation agriculture, crop rotation, leaving as much plant residue on the soil as possible. And then probably as important as anything, soft approaches to outreach, that you can't just give people internationally just the hard numbers, that there has to be a reason why those numbers are important and to really change their hearts rather than just their minds alone. So we're choosing Mexico as a model, and there's several reasons why Mexico is a good location for us. We have support infrastructure there. There is a relatively low cost of travel. It's an ease to get there. We have direct flights that will leave from Houston and Dallas for us that go right into Querétaro to the area that we want to work in. Yes, there are safety concerns there, but because we have experience in Mexico, we know we should and should not be going. So we don't think that it's any more dangerous than what some of the places we go to in the U.S. But there are also unique problems within that country that are ubiquitous around the world, particularly in those places with food insecurity. They have water shortage issues. There is economic stability, a big gap between the rich and the poor there. And then, of course, they have all sorts of pests in terms of insects and weeds and diseases. When students go to Mexico, obviously they're going to see a different cultural experience. It goes from food to history to archaeology. So they get a taste of that there in Mexico. But in Texas, we also have a very personal connection with Mexico. And I saw this flag in the Chapultepec National Museum. And this is actually the flag that flew over the Alamo. And being a Texan, I kind of looked around and said, you know, is there any way I can get this back to Texas? I mean, it really does belong to us. It was Jim Bowie brought it down there, but they had armed guards, and I just didn't feel like creating an international incident. But one of the greatest resources we have available in Mexico is CEMET, the International Corn and Wheat Research Station. There's a group. They actually have a statue of Norman Borlaug there, and there on the bottom left, that's actually the same field that Dr. Borlaug was notified that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. That's the field that he was standing in taking notes there. And so the students actually got to be in the presence of one of the most renowned events in agriculture history. And just a other side note, Dr. Borlaug used a lot of that prize money to actually purchase that field because it was being rented at the time. He purchased it and donated it back to CEMET. So just quite a unique individual there. We have started partnering up with colleagues from the University of Guanajuato. And that's about an hour away from our central site that we'd like to use there. But they've got an emerging and functioning agronomy department. The city that we're going to be near San Miguel de Allende, and San Miguel is it's got a lot of expats there. A lot of English is spoken there. A lot of Americans and Canadians have moved into San Miguel, so it's a nice place. The facility that we're going to use is the Hacienda Santa Clara, and this was built by an alumni of Texas A&M, Pablo Marvin. By the way, Pablo was he played on Dr. Borlaug's Little League baseball team, so he calls him Coach Borlaug. But Pablo built Hacienda Santa Clara. It's got dormitories, it's got cafeterias, laundry service. I mean, it's a A1 nice place to be at. There's several activities around San Miguel de Allende. There you see they're processing tunas or, you know, the cactus fruit there. There's a canning plant there, a lot of natural resources. It's a very beautiful area, a lot of things for students to do. This summer I took a group on a horseback riding adventure. They told me that we would get a little bit wet. Little did I know the horses go start swimming through the river, and I had to protect my smartphone. I was holding my leg as far up in the air as possible. it was a nice adventure for the students, not so much for the professor. 70% of the broccoli that we consume in the U.S. is coming from the state of Guanajuato, and so their water issues are our water issues. And one of the major farms there, and it's right across the street from Hacienda Santa Clara, is the Mr. Lucky Farm, and had served as the Director General of the NEFOP, and now is the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Guanajuato. But it's about a 20,000-acre horticulture farm. It's high-tech as anything that you'd see in the U.S., and he has welcomed us to work on his farm on any types of projects that we would be interested in. But the real key around there's still a lot of subsistence farms around there, and they're very open and receptive to us developing laboratories and teaching modules and using systems and approaches that would not only benefit them, but also, more importantly, train our students into taking that knowledge that they would gain in those laboratories and expanding it out into some of these mission-based curriculums. So with that, I'm assuming I stayed on time, because I don't want to stand between us and lunch. That's a bad thing. But we're developing our program, and Auburn's developing our program, but they're going to be together, but there's going to be a core of independence there as well. But if this is something that you think would fit into your programs and your schools, I would invite you to let me know, and we can get you hooked in as well, because the more the merrier. There is a critical mass that we need here, and it certainly offers a great chance to network and to train these students. So with that, I appreciate your attention.
We have time for questions.
Yes, Kevin.
You plan to have students go there for what kind of time period? Semester, summer?
Well, initially, we would like for students to go down there for about half a summer. Long term, what we would like to do is include that into the entire summer and then even into a full fall semester if we can get it rolling effectively. And that's when we're going to have to use a lot of distance ed courses and have some faculty that are willing to go down there and teach for an entire semester. Yes, Emily. Right now they're finding us, but we certainly need to do a better job in finding them. And so I think, this is one of the things that I'm most aggravated with our department, is that we don't know where our students are coming from. And there would be a simple little survey, like, how did you find out about us? I ask my students in my class, and I say, where did you find out, how did you find out about our department? And the number one response is our website. The number two response is a friend. And so beef up our website to increase our visibility in social media. This year, one of the great things that we did is, I say we, the Agronomy Club, and I'm no longer involved with the Agronomy Club, but the Agronomy Club did a corn maze. And I didn't think it was going to work. In fact, I was telling them, don't do it. It's going to be a big failure. But lo and behold, they pulled it off, and it was pretty amazing. But they wound up getting that silly little corn maze. It went viral. It was on all the local TV stations. It was out of the TV station out of Houston. USA Today picked it up. So a lot of people, it raised the visibility of agronomy programs at Texas A&M.
One final question.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Friends, that concludes our session for today. Presentations. We only had six, but it seems like they were very impactful presentations. I believe we covered curriculum design, writing, classroom and class designs, even adjustment of courses to suit to the very circumstances and the needs of our students, and of course smartphones, you know, new technologies. That's a very good set, a very solid set of talks. And that concludes our session, and I encourage you to stay. We have 5 minutes before our business meeting. If you have questions to the other speakers, they're still around. I encourage you to mingle and talk with them. Thank you very much.